And that's another thing that I do for people is I help them see things they don't see because I see possibilities everywhere.
Yeah.
And most people see blocks.
Yes.
They see why it can't be.
Yeah. Everybody, and welcome back to Hustlin' in Heels podcast. I am your host, Stacey.
And Stacey tried to trick me today, but I'm your co-host, Angie.
I started right when she started drinking a glass of wine, so.
Got you.
I know. So how's the week been, Ange?
You know, I'm not crawling this time. I'm kind of a slowly, I'm not even jogging through this, but I am a slow walk at this point. So we're getting better.
That's good. And the holidays are fast approaching.
Yeah.
And so by the time that you all hear this, Christmas will be coming soon.
Less than a week away.
Yeah. And I'm not ready. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, me neither. Mm-hmm. But getting there.
I think my kids need presents. I should do that.
They might appreciate
that. I should do that. Yeah. That would be a good thing for me to do. So I'm hoping I can scoot in under like the Amazon Prime deadline. Mm. But
you should probably do
that. You never know.
Fast.
Yeah. I mean, Meijer's open all the time.
That's true. So CVS usually has some great stuff.
It's fine. You know what? I don't even need to get my kids anything. You know why? Nana Claus. There's no need. Everything my kids already said they wanted.
Done.
Acoustic guitar. Huh. Keyboard for my daughter. I guess they're starting a band.
You're gonna have a loud household.
Yeah, I was hoping those will all stay at Nana's. So you know, those are already handled by Nana Claus. So I'm figuring I'd pick up some socks, maybe a couple books, call it good.
Some fruit, done.
Some fruit,
100%.
Oranges and pennies.
Yes,
that's what I'll be doing. Just yes. Like a little house on the prairie Christmas. So yeah, it's been a good week. And we are back here in the studio. We have a couple of different bottles of wine that we are drinking tonight. So Angie brought the wine tonight, and it's from Indiana tonight. We are, you know, Angie lives in Indiana. Our guest tonight actually lives in Indiana, so we only thought it appropriate. So the wine that I am drinking that Angie brought, specifically because of what it's called in the label, is from Buck Creek Winery, and it is the Roadhouse Red, and there's a picture of a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 12-point buck on the label. It's a beautiful buck. It's one that I wish I would have seen in the woods, but I haven't yet. There's still time.
There's still time. It's from a winery in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And yeah, I did fail a little bit. I figured it was red, so it probably wasn't sweet. Ooh. Apparently it is, but it's got a buck on it.
If you can, we'll post a picture of it out on Instagram and on Facebook like we do with all of the wine. So you'll have to take a look at it. It's a pretty cool bottle. So thanks for bringing that.
Welcome.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking, I'm drinking some Oliver's apple pie wine, and it tastes like apple pie in your mouth, and it is amazing. A little reminiscent of Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. but I mean, apple pie is good all the time, right?
All year.
I mean, you don't need a holiday just for apple pie.
America.
100%. My husband would eat it morning, noon, and night if I knew how to bake, but I don't. he knew it before he married me,
right?
So I don't feel too bad.
Nope.
It's Oliver's. Oliver's is in Bloomington, Indiana. And it was actually, I've never been there personally, but I drank a lot of their wine, so I should probably go. But I was taking a look at their website, and I really like their core values. I'm just going to read them real quick. Expect quality, think differently, and get stuff done. Mm. I mean, that kind of encompasses life in general, right?
Yeah, and our podcast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 100%. And it kind of encompasses our guest today, too. Our guest today is Charisse McCrory. Did I say that correctly?
You did.
Perfect. And we go back a really long ways, over a decade probably. Started out as colleagues and really turned into friends, but she mentored me a lot along the way. There are a lot of lessons that probably she doesn't even know that she taught me, but that I really, really appreciate. I'm really excited to hear her story. She's done a lot of things and has really kind of cultivated herself and has thrown herself into and taken some risks throughout the way and has become very, very successful. And super excited to have you here today.
Thanks. I'm excited too. Yeah. What a great remembrance there.
Yeah.
I don't know what I taught you. I never do.
All kinds of things. I mean, I think that you started to instill in me that that passion, right? If you're doing something, do it well. Mm. And when you do something well, it's because you love it. And, you know, I've really sort of taken that seriously. And I've kept those words in my head throughout the years. And like I said, you don't even know it. But and it's a testament to sometimes the things that you say you don't know.
Right.
What, you know, what people are holding on to. But 100%. And here we are a decade later reconnecting again.
I know.
Really excited cool. about it.
Yeah. Seed planting, I call that.
Seed planting.
I just
yeah.
don't know. Hmm. And it's really cool to find out later what happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you do right now. And then I'd love to sort of go back and talk about your journey and how you got there.
So the official word is I'm a certified business coach, certified life coach, author, artist, caregiver, mother, grandmother now. I have a lot of hats that I wear.
Yeah.
I'm having the time of my life right now. I just turned 57 in August, and you don't get to be 57 years old without some bumps and bruises and some belly laughs and joy. So it's a mixed bag. In fact, I posted on Facebook today, my life today is such a mix of joy and sorrow. And, you know, I think everybody encounters that. And I listened to one of your podcasts, the taboo table talk mm-hmm. or topics is.
I get it wrong every time. Just look at Angie. She knows the right words.
And I was really kind of reflecting on your ages and where you are in your life and how, and where was I at that age and how, what can I bring to the table that's, you know, from the great mother wisdom, grandmother sort of, I've been there and I've done that point of view. And it's just kind of fun to be in this place where I don't really give a shit. Can I cuss?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, we're swearzy.
So I don't give a shit what anyone else thinks anymore. Like, you guys are starting to get that at your age.
Mm-hmm.
And just wait because it gets even better and amplified.
That's what my mom said.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, and she said after she turned 50, she doesn't give a fuck anymore.
And no fuck.
Oh, man, I am so close. I am under a decade away, you guys.
You know what?
It's my mom would never say that in polite company, by the way. She's way too sweet, but... To my sister and I.
I know how awesome it's going to be for you, and it just keeps getting better. And so I'm in this 57th year, and I've been married since 1982 to the love of my life, and I haven't always known that he was the love of my life. Halfway in between, and I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast, but he might. So I'll say it nice. Uh-huh. I really kind of paused and thought, what the hell did I do? And is this really, can I do this the rest forever, for the rest of my life forever? Did I really say yes to that? And now, you know, it is amazing. And
yeah.
It's so good to be on the other side of those doubts. And it's so good to know that I created this really wonderful partnership with this flawed, imperfect, and delightful man. And I have two children who are grown, who admire what we've created in terms of relationship. And now I have a grandson. His name is Rowan, and he was born in January.
Congratulations.
And so he's almost a year. And he, you know, it's just cool that we can be grandparents together and not have to split up holidays and things like that. And I had a couple good role models in those 30 years when my grandma called my 30s, everybody's 30s, especially women, the crazy 30s.
I can relate.
That was a really wise...
Some of my best years.
A wise term for my 30s. And what I'm hearing from your podcast, your 30s, And so it's kind of cool to be able to say, yep, there was some craziness in my 30s. And here I am still standing with the love of my life in a life that I completely adore. And obviously there is sorrow. There is passing of people. There's illness. There's when you get to be 57, depending on, you know, the birth order, and I'm the third child of four. So my mother is 84. And she is in, you know, she's taking she's in her last days. Let's face mm-hmm. it. Her parents didn't even live as long as she did. She had a stroke in September. And so we're grabbing every experience we can get out of her life. And she lives with us and has for the last 20 some years. So I am the caretaker. And so everything else, you know, how it works in life is your priorities just sort of reorganize when you have something like that happen. And in spite of that, there is so freaking much joy mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. if you see it that way. And I've been accused of being like one time a friend of mine said, Charisse, is your sky always blue? Well, yes.
It's not a bad place to live.
Not that I never have a gloomy day, but I can almost always find the silver lining mm-hmm. in pretty much anything. Hmm. I got way off track on that.
No, not at all. I actually, I'd love to go. I definitely want to talk about like how you became a life coach and those sorts of things. But you touched on something in this conversation that I don't want to let go. You said that at one point in your marriage, you paused and thought, can I really do this? And I, through some of our episodes, I've actually had some people reach out and they're in that same phase of their life right now. Do you remember?
I do.
Why you chose to stay? What was it?
There are a few things in my marriage that I can say now that I wouldn't have been able to articulate then. But at the time, I had some coworkers who were, you know how when you're at work, you're somebody, and then when you're at home, sometimes you're somebody else, and when you merge the two worlds, sometimes people say, really? Like, that doesn't mm-hmm. make sense. That mm-hmm. happened to me. Mm. And there are so many ways in which my husband and I differ. And we, you know, I'm a risk taker. He's stable as the day is long. He does not take risks. We wouldn't probably own anything if it weren't for me saying, let's go buy a house, honey. Mm-hmm. He's buying a new truck today, as a matter of fact, because I'm saying you need a freaking truck to drive. So that there, those differences were so profound for me in my 30s, and just imagining, thinking forward, thinking, oh my God, the rest of my life is going to be consumed by me talking him into things. Or, you know, I reflected a little bit also on the conversation that you all had on this show about the being a leader all the time and having to make all the decisions. And that's totally me. Like, everybody looks to Charisse. You'll know what to do. Mm-hmm. And that gets tiring. Yeah. And my husband, I love him so much because he lets me take the lead. And then what I've had to learn since those days is I don't always have to, and I can ask for help. And if I say, dude, you need to just freaking decide where we're going for dinner, he'll do it.
Yeah.
As long as I don't argue back, oh, I don't want to go there. Yeah. That's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking about all the differences and focusing so much on that. And it's sort of the grass is always greener thing that goes on in a person's head. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, you know, if I could just get somebody more like this. That, and we had two children. We had children immediately as soon as we got married because I dropped out of college. I knew I wanted a husband. I knew I wanted children. I did not know what I wanted to do as a career, so I stopped wasting my money because I was in general education at Western Michigan University, and I was like, what the hell? I don't know what I'm going to do with that. So I do know I love this guy. I love the life I could have with him, so I did that. And then I didn't realize how indecisive he was at that time and how decisive I was, so we grew up together. We basically mm-hmm. groomed each other for mm-hmm. this life that we've lived. And it turned out I made every decision. And so that idea of that wore me out a little bit in my 30s. And I wanted someone a little more, you know, decisive and headstrong. And yet it probably would have completely fallen apart.
Right.
Because sure. I do like to make decisions. I do like things to be my way. So my husband tells me often, he'll say, why? I'm not going to ever argue with you because you always win. And I say, honey, I only win because I'm right. I wouldn't argue otherwise. Hello. So anyway, the turnaround for me, though, this is a crazy story. This was back in the day before you two were born, probably, but when AOL was a thing.
Chat AOL.
Mm-hmm. So chat rooms, right? I was so fascinated by the idea that I could get online and through some kind of magic wand, I could be speaking to somebody in another country. And so I loved the chat room thing. And I was in a chat room. I can't tell you how I got there, what the chat room was. But I remember kind of saying my angst about, like, really, I'm not sure I can do this marriage thing the rest of my life to the same person. And this woman, who I've never spoken to or referred to since, said, what if what you want is right in front of you? And I was like, oh, really? So if I just... In my coaching practice, I talk about turning a prism. So you know how light comes through a prism one way with the light shining in a certain direction. And then if you tilt it, the light goes in a different direction. So in my head, that's kind of what I did. I turned the prism and I thought, okay, so I did this. This guy has a lot of really awesome qualities. He is the father of my children. He is an awesome provider and he makes me laugh. And what if I just turn the prism and say, okay, this is what I want for the rest of my life. And I'm not saying that was a magic wand because we've had our disputes over the years, but we really don't argue much because he won't argue with me because I'm always right.
Right.
And also, this whole idea of compromise, which you guys talked about in another podcast, there is that. I have softened. and that's another thing you ladies get to look forward
to. Well, there's hope for us.
Yeah,
and I love that. And I find myself doing that a little more than I had in the past. And that was a hard concept for me to be able to grasp. And I'm still not great at it. You know, when you grow up a quote unquote strong and independent woman, even into your 30s, it's difficult to soften a little bit. It's difficult to take a step back. It's difficult to back down, really. But
especially at your age.
Yeah.
And even though I didn't intend it to be that way, it did happen sort of just naturally that I think priorities shifted, right? So one of my favorite authors, her name is Byron Katie, and she says, would you rather be right or free? I use that all the time. Yeah. Would you rather be right or free? So I could bitch and moan about this thing, and I could know that I'm right, and I could argue, and I could stand up on the top of the mountaintop and plant the flag and be completely trapped because nobody else could see it my way.
Sure.
Or I can say, you know what? Everyone's different. There's a perspective that I'm not getting. I'm free of it. I don't need to be attached to driving it or consuming it or being right about it.
I love that.
Yeah. And that's probably saved my marriage, that one quote.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, it just works on so many different levels, not just marriage relationships, you know, all kinds of relationships, with the exception of parenting, because I am right. And if parenting. I go toe-to-toe with my four-year-old, I'm going to win, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me just give me a
laugh. She might think differently.
She definitely does.
I'm going to give you a little example of that. So I have a son and a daughter, and my son was the biggest test of my life, especially when he was four. And in fact, he got kicked out of preschool when he was four. just to fast forward, right now he is a systems engineer, and he has a really important job, and he's doing just fine. And so I used to say to myself, please, God, let persistence pay off. Someday he's going to be persistent in his job and it's going to be awesome. But right now I want to kill him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's hope. Yeah. And one time, this story is one I tell often because it's just so profound for parents. So I went to work one morning late because my son would not get dressed. What he wanted to wear was not what I wanted him to wear. He would never wear anything except stupid, ugly sweats. And at one point I had to say to the teacher, I don't dress him. He dresses himself. So I got to work and I'm crying. I'm so frustrated with my son. And I come in and I'm like pounding on the counter. I'm like, what in the hell can I do with this kid? And this really unlikely coworker that I had, who I didn't have much respect for, kind of an asshole, he just looked at me and he said, well, why don't you just go home and give him a hug and tell him you love him? And I was like, shit, man, it could be that easy.
So uh-huh. even in those moments when I, you know, and they had many more after that because he was young then. Even in those moments when he was really pissing me off, I honestly did remember that advice. And I just kind of like, okay, stop. Give him a hug. And you know what? Hugging, loving, that was really the first time I ever got that lesson that love really is the answer. Yeah. It super is mm-hmm. the answer. And it's so much easier than dividing yeah. and trying hugs to be right.
And connecting. There's just something about that connection that kind of just breaks down the walls yeah. and the barriers and the animosity. And you just get to take a breath and kind of reconnect.
Taking a breath is really mm-hmm. important in that. Taking the mm-hmm. breath and then hugging. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, that's my obstinate child story. Mm-hmm. I had one of those. Mm-hmm. I still do. Mm-hmm. He spent the week with me last week.
Yeah. Huh.
And mm-hmm. his little obstinate 11-month-old.
Oh, how much do you love that, though?
Oh, my God. He's not obstinate enough. I wish yeah. he'd be a little ornery.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes.
Oh, I mean, he's got plenty of time. Sure. You can yeah. cultivate that.
Sometimes when I tell my mom stories about, like, my children, if they're being obstinate like that, you know, I kind of, like, expect her to, like, commiserate and empathize, and she just laughs uh-huh. and laughs.
Too bad, honey.
A little karma coming your way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Karma
exactly.
is a bitch. Yes. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, 100%.
She sure is. So I love that you're here, too, because I get to learn about you and discover you. Usually, you know, for a lot of the episodes, I know the guest. Mm-hmm. And I don't know you. But from what I know already, you know, it sounds like you have just this fascinating story. So tell the listeners a little bit about what you do today, and then we'll backtrack a little bit to talk about how you got yeah. there.
Okay. I love change, and I might be the only person in the world that loves change.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I get so bored with mediocre status yes. quo shit that I can't stand it, so I have to love change, right? That's the opposite. So in the last 12 years, starting in 2006, so we'll be going into my 13th year, I have been a life coach, a business coach, a business consultant. I teach conscious principles. I teach communication. I teach accountability. I teach passion. I believe that people not can love what they do, but need to, must love what they do, because otherwise we're robots. We're walking around half numb and pissed off all the time. So I teach people to love, to your point, Angie. I teach people to love who they are, first of all, because self-love is also missing. And I teach people to love what they do, no matter what it is they're doing. So be happy wherever you're planted. My brand today is called Be Wildly Happy. And that's an iteration of several brands. I don't even know if Angie used to help me a little bit with branding.
A little bit.
And that came to me last fall, actually, when I really hit a crossroads. I hit a place where I wasn't super happy and I was bored. And I wasn't really pleased with the kind of work I was doing, yet I was making really great money. So it's hard to walk away from really great. Even in my own practice, I got trapped like some people do in jobs. So I started to really dream about what would I love to do next. And that is always the question I ask myself when I feel that feeling of, you know, just sort of like I'm bored. So what would I love to do next? And I don't know. I have this natural gift of possibility thinking. And I don't always realize how much other people don't have that until they say, well, how the hell did you think of that? So I started this brand. I built my website because I'm stupid like that, and I don't hire things out when I should. So I built my website, and I started developing this brand, Be Wildly Happy. And mostly what that is it's a way for me to take a stand for women who are settling and to show them ways not to settle. And I'm a big fan of baby steps in that case because I like change and other people don't.
Right.
So I'm sort of a, you know, I kind of tripped on this phrase, great mother. And at that time last fall, and great mother is capital G, capital M, not a great mother, but great mother, the divine great mother. And I started thinking about how much masculine energy shaped me my whole life.
because I didn't have a, I never went back to college, don't have a college degree. And I worked next to MBAs and they were men and they were my models. And they were the ones that taught me how to be a leader. And I emulated their behavior in so many unhealthy ways. And then it took me a while to really tap into this feminine energy that I had. So I created this whole brand to really speak to that aspect of myself, which is nurturing, kind, loving, fierce, protective, creative. And I think those aspects exist in every woman and they're untapped. So Be Wildly Happy is meant to help women tap into that energy no matter what their age. I don't think we have to wait until we're 57 years old to do things like that. We sometimes do.
Yes.
And it's possible sooner. So I love to introduce these ideas to women in their early, late 30s, early 40s, like the two of you. And really, there are no rules anyway, so you can do it anytime you want to. Mm-hmm. But it's super freeing to think, I can be happy. But what if I'm wildly happy? That's a little bit different, isn't it? Yeah. Wildly happy is different. And people get jazzed about the idea. They're like, okay. So I thought I was doing okay, being just, you know, well, yeah, I have a good life. I'm happy. Wildly happy is a whole other thing. So that includes I do quarterly retreats with groups. I do individual retreats with one person, a creative retreat for a couple days. We'll go to someplace fabulous and do a couple days of immersed work. I also found that I'm an artist in the last year. So I was making art last fall in my pajamas on a Sunday. I was just painting. I found this format called alcohol ink, and it's not well known, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I sat down on a Sunday with some wine, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to paint this thing. And I just out of the, I don't know, impulsivity of social media, I took a picture of it, put it on Facebook, and somebody, a friend of mine, wanted to buy it, the piece. And I was like, really? You want to buy it? Huh. Think about that. So that started me thinking, okay, I freaking love to make paintings. Why wouldn't I, with my sense for business, all my experience in business, and my creativity and my love for creating and making, being a maker, why wouldn't I turn that into something? So that became part of the Be Wildly Happy brand. And then I spun that off into Great Mother Art, which is my art business. So my vision for the future is to have, I want to have an online gallery for female artists, unknown female artists, and also diverse female artists. And I want to be able to feature artists weekly and sell their art and help them get their art sold, which is a problem. We all have heard the term starving artist, and I hate that term, so sorry I said it just now. But that's part of my future vision as I sail into the sunset with my husband after he retires and we travel around the world.
I think those are amazing
plans. That's a plan.
I probably did not answer your question, but that is where I am right now.
Yeah.
And so I do coaching. I do business coaching. But I also have a really solid rule. I have to love the person or I don't, or I say no. I'm very, very, very particular. They have to inspire me. They have to do the work. They have to be ready to make big things happen or I'm bored. So yes. There's another coach out there for that person.
I love that you talk about being bored. I mean, I don't think I've been bored since 2008, but, I understand the concept, right? Yeah. And I share that with you, I think, in the sense that it's like, I've said this before, you know, having 50 ideas before my morning coffee, right?
Oh, my God. Isn't it a problem?
It's a problem and a blessing.
It is.
You know, I just did, a Myers-Briggs test. I'm part of this Leadership Accelerator program. And we did the Myers-Briggs test for the first time ever. And the results were so funny to me because they were so spot on. But it was like, you know, essentially ideas. You know, ideas, ideas, ideas. And more than you have time to do. And which is, I think, for me, a fun way to live life. I don't know another way to live life. But when you have all those ideas, it's really difficult to be bored because then you just don't really even have enough time in the day to make all those ideas happen. And that becomes another problem, but
for
another podcast.
You need staff or something to make those ideas happen.
Yeah.
I call myself an idea machine. That's my favorite thing. I love ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I do for people is I help them see things they don't see because I see possibilities everywhere.
Yeah.
And most people see blocks. Yes. They see why it can't be.
Yes.
That's actually what, that's one of the things that I've always loved about you is anytime we would sit down and chat, you would often ask where I was at in my life. We would talk about a lot of obstacles, and instantaneously it was always, well, what if this? Mm-hmm. And what if that? Have you thought of this path? Or have you, you tilt that prism all the way around until the person sitting across from you says, you know, I didn't actually think about that, mm-hmm. but maybe. And it's that kind of positivity and those ideas that you unlock for other people that I think have continued to make me think of you throughout the years, and the reason that you're sitting across from me right now. I think it's absolutely amazing. But you weren't always a life coach.
No.
Right?
No. I am a corporate dropout. I'm a job hopper, first of all. I was a job hopper. I'm a recovering job hopper. The way to recover from job hopping is to own your own business and just change it all the time.
Yep. Right.
Or to do what you love.
Yeah, right.
It's to do what you love.
It is to do. That's the bottom line, right? Yeah. So I was in many different industries over the years. I started out as a temporary because I didn't have a degree. And as soon as my children were old enough to go back to work, I didn't know what I wanted to do still. So I took a job as a receptionist for a builder in Kalamazoo through a temp agency. And they were a growing company. And so I had the opportunity to learn a lot of new stuff. And I basically took the place over. And by the time I was done, I was I didn't really have a title, but I had my hands in every aspect of the business. And so that led to one thing, another thing, another kind of leadership. And eventually I ended up as an assistant operations manager. And then I figured out that because I dealt with purchasing in that job and I dealt with salespeople, I figured out salespeople have all the fun and they have a lot less work. They just meander around the world, you know, laughing and joking.
Talk to people.
Yeah, talk to people, make
having
promises
cocktails.
That we can't keep. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I thought, they get paid a lot more too. Mm-hmm. So what the hell am I doing in this stupid job? So I took my first job in sales and basically did a charity stint there because I didn't make any money. I worked for the for the Chamber of Commerce selling memberships.
Isn't
super exciting, but still, it was a worthwhile thing, and I did learn a lot. So I gave my 6 months to them and then got recruited away into the world of radio advertising. So I did that for 5 years with various advertising departments in certain radio stations. And then I had a stint in I got recruited away from advertising to become an insurance agent.
Oh.
Well, horrible choice. Sorry for any of the insurance agent people, but it just wasn't for me. And I really adored the person who recruited me out, and I made the mistake of thinking I could make it work because I so liked working with him. Mm-hmm. And we agreed on so many things, and it was really synergistic, and mm-hmm. I just like got yanked out of my world and into that world. And that was a crash and burn. We ended up going bankrupt. We ended up starting our own company, even though we worked for like a captive agency, and then we could do it better ourselves, and we didn't have so many rules. So we started our own thing, and then I could not do the thing that I had to do. I just couldn't get my head around insurance. I didn't understand it, didn't want to, didn't love it.
Right.
First lesson.
Didn't love it.
So financed the business on credit cards. Don't ever do that. And it was my credit because my partner's credit, he had just claimed bankruptcy from a marriage, a divorce. Oh. So that was big learning for me. And then I went just sort of fetal position into a job after that and got my financial bearings again, selling transportation, made a shit ton of money, but traveled a lot. And my kids were getting into the high school years and I needed to be around for their stuff.
Yeah.
So I stopped working for them, took another job to work as the general sales manager for the Elkhart Truth.
Hmm.
And that was my job was to, in the days, the old newspaper days, newspaper advertising days, advertisers just call you on the phone and say, hey, I want to spend about $3,000 on Saturday. And that didn't happen anymore because the internet.
Right.
And so they wanted me to retool their sales team. So that meant firing a bunch of longtime people who weren't performing and hiring a bunch of new, fresh people and then training them and turning them into rock star salespeople. And oh, by the way, you got to keep your numbers the same during that whole process. So I had sales goals that I never met, which I was always Susie Rockstar. I came into any company and I just killed it. You know, I was promoted all the time. I was never the one not performing. And that experience almost killed me. So I ended up getting sick. I ended up in the emergency room on a Sunday because I stood up to get out of bed and I fell down. And turns out I had viral meningitis. So I spent like 10 days absolutely certain I was dying. Told my husband, you know what? You guys are lying to me. I'm actually dying right now, aren't I? You're just not telling me the truth. And he was like, no, you're not dying.
No, but how about that insurance policy?
Right? You hold it. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right?
We did have one.
Yeah.
So anyway, we bought it when I was in insurance because I needed the commission.
You needed somebody. Yeah. You needed business. You
needed a sale, damn it.
Exactly. Hey, I need life insurance. So anyway, that was my biggest crash and burn because I was really crawling under a snake's belly. Not only was I super unhealthy, my immune system was weakened from stress. So that's my lesson to everyone. When you're feeling the stress, or even when you're not feeling the stress, but you know you're under a lot of stress, pay attention to your health and get out of the stress if you can. So I got back to work about 3 weeks later after being on mega doses of morphine and Oxy and Vicodin. Vicodin was my take-home pill. And I took that to work and took it because I was in excruciating headache pain. And it turns out Vicodin for me is like a truth serum.
Hmm.
Oh. I had no filter, so I just kind of went to my boss and said, dude, I am not going to work anymore for your dream. It's killing me and it's not worth it. And I would like to have an exit plan.
Huh.
Thinking, you know, I'll get an exit plan. It'll be a couple weeks off. They need me here, right? Well, the next day he called me in, HR actually called me in and said, so you're fired. And we have this really awesome 3-month stupid severance that if you sign this paper and don't sue us for firing you when you're not healthy, you can have this money. So I took it. And then a couple months into my severance package, my husband was, I had all kinds of time on my hands, right? Yeah. I'm used to working.
Sure.
Well, I was checking out his back and his bare back had a great big black mole on it. And I sent him to the doctor and it turned out to be melanoma.
Oh, wow.
So good thing I had time to check out his back, right? Because I saved his life. Every doctor in the world who's ever looked at him says I saved his life.
Hmm. Well.
So he had melanoma and he got over it. He has had it again and he's survived it twice. So that's awesome.
Wow.
But that year in 2006, when I got fired, I got sick, I got fired, he got sick. I was in bed 3 days a week with an excruciating headache and couldn't function. That's the year I found coaching.
Interesting.
And so I found it on a career builder listing, thinking I was going to get a job, even though the last thing I could even imagine was going back to that kind of corporate pressure. But I had to because I earned twice the money that my husband made, and I had to figure that out. So
And health insurance probably.
Everything. Like I needed to get back to work.
Sure.
And I found this ad, which turned out to be a trick ad, like most are. So they thought it looked like a job, but actually they wanted me to come and train with them to become certified as a business coach. I didn't even know what business coaching was because I'm in the Midwest and it happened first in California, like everything.
Right.
Yeah, but I was going to say back then it was an up and coming. It wasn't well known.
It wasn't well known, especially in Elkhart, Indiana.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So I had I went to the training and I came back 2 weeks later. I had my first client, which is the guy that I was in the insurance business with. He owed me.
Really?
And he had his own practice that was thriving in Des Moines, Iowa. So. And we're still good friends to this day. He handles all my money, in fact. So the thing is, I had a big crash and burn during the first failure, and then I had the second one. And then I just knew in my heart that I needed to be super intentional about my next steps. And I knew that I was probably unemployable, and I still say that I am. I can't work for anyone now because I've had too much freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't take that shit away. So that's how I got to here. And then since then, of course, I have iterated that so many times. I have done straight up corporate coaching. I have done, I was resistant to life coaching because I thought that sounded boring and lame. And what do I really want to hear everyone's problems? But then I realized there is no distinction between life and business. And you, if you have problems at home, it's coming to work. And if you have problems at work, it's going home.
Mm-hmm.
And so a mentor of mine at the time said, Charisse, if you know about something, if you've lived something, why wouldn't you help someone with that thing if they're asking you for it? Mm-hmm. And so I took all the rules away and here I am.
And since then, you've reinvented yourself a few times over. I mean, you were a life coach and then you became an author of your book and an artist. And I can only imagine what the next years will bring. I mean, you're running retreats and doing all of those sorts of things.
I'm only doing what I love now, Angie. Mm-hmm. I am not motivated by money anymore. I used to be super motivated by money. Not that I don't like money. I do. I love money. Money. I love what money does, right? But I'm not willing to sacrifice my integrity or my happiness to do something for money. So I'm really selective about the people that I work with. And there's a need in the world right now. You know, a couple of years ago during the election season, the second to the last election season, the world was experiencing so much disconnect. And families were being torn apart. I saw it in my coaching practice. People were, unhappy and disillusioned by what the world didn't feel as safe as it used to. And so I was in a project with my business partner at the time, David Firth, who, we were working on a project together that was to teach people how to communicate in large groups. And nobody was buying it. Nobody wanted it. Even though if people were to operate in this way that we teach, it would save the entire world, honest to God. It is the water for people in the desert, but people didn't want the solution. And we got super frustrated, both of us. We were like, God, there's never been a time in our lifetimes where this work isn't more needed in the world and nobody wants it. So we got pissed off and we said, all right, screw it. We're just going to spend the next 30 days and we're going to be creative. We're going to open up the door to all of our creativity. We're each going to write an essay every day, no matter what. We're making this commitment to each other and we're going to send it out to this list of people that said they wanted to get it. So we did a 30-day challenge between the two of us and it felt really good to be in action and to be teaching things that make people, if they do the work, make their lives better. So we did that and, you know, we were proud of the work at the end of the 30 days. We're like, oh, that was pretty fun and pretty cool. And so we got good feedback from people. That was in March of 2017, I think. Yeah. No, 18. 2000. Oh, it's been a long year. 2018.
Just this past year.
Yeah. It just seems like it was longer ago, but I don't think it was. So we kind of just let it sit there. And then we said at the time, wow, this is something. We'll do something with this thing later. And then in the fall, we started, actually it was summer, we started working on a webinar. And we were looking for a giveaway for the people on the webinar. And we thought, well, we'll just put this little PDF thing together. And of course, neither of us could do that. So we took a look at the thing and we were like, oh, fuck, this is already outdated. I don't even believe this shit anymore. It happens all the time to me. So we went back to the drawing board and we thought, you know what? If we have lost our mojo, clearly, we feel disillusioned. We feel unhappy about how people aren't getting along at the dinner table because of their political divides. The world is in a crisis and we got caught up in the news cycle, which is another sub. We could do a whole podcast on that. But what happened was we decided what we would say, we would write about what we would say to someone who was in front of us who had lost their mojo because we had lost ours.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on an airplane and he's from the UK. And if we had, that's another topic, but he has the best voice in the world. And so we do a lot of voice things together because we love our voices together. So he came back from a trip from the UK and he said, I was thinking on the plane, let's each of us create 6 essential things that we would say to people who've lost their mojo. So he said, I did mine on the plane. I don't want to show them to you until you do yours. You do yours. I'll do mine. We'll put it together and see what it is. So I did that. That was a great idea. I'm all about the essence of things now. The older I get, the simpler I want things, and I don't want a bunch of garbage around things. I want it to be really super concise. So I did mine. He did his. We looked at it together, and I noticed, I said, David, yours are all about what to know, and mine are all about what to do, which is probably pretty accurate. I'm a doer, and he's a thinker. So we wrote this book, and we included the essence of what we would each say. And it's I designed the cover because I'm an artist, turns out. And that was really fun. I had never done that before. I designed the inside of the book and the outside. And we cut maybe, 10,000 words from the book because we were looking for just the essence.
Oh, yeah.
So it's meant to be a coffee table book that when someone feels discouraged, they can open it to any page and find something to say or do or think about.
It's beautiful.
Thus the title Rise.
The title Rise, How to Reignite Your Mojo and Make a World in Which You'd Love to Live. Because the other idea that is so central to both of us, and especially to me, is we are makers. We are making our life. With every single choice, every decision, every emotion, every belief, everything we do, we have created this life. And so many people walk around in the world not knowing that. They think things are done unto them. These circumstances are not my fault, and I have to sit here and live with them. So I think I'll bitch a little bit about that and
sit in it.
In my pity party. Mm-hmm. And that's not. Oh, wait, that's not a way to be wildly happy.
And that's not the way to spend your one at bat.
No, right. It's not. Mm-hmm. So this book is about that. It's about teaching people to rise up to another level of action or love. Love is all the way through. Mm-hmm. David and I are both big fans of love. We love love.
You know, and I love this thread of intentionality. As I've sat here and listened to you talk and, you know, when you reached the point of I need to do something that I love to, you know, make my life my life and get it back. There have been these consistent moments of intentionality that have gotten you to where you're at. So even though you have these big ideas and these wild ideas and all of these things that perhaps don't quite make the cut, once you narrow it down and you are intentional about something, it has gotten you to where you're at.
You know what? I learned by accident the power of focus. I used to avoid focus at all costs because it was boring, I thought, and discipline. Focus and discipline. I was like, I don't have that, either one of those. So I'm probably not ever going to really get anything done because I don't have focus and I don't have discipline. It turns out I do. When
you
I want
channel
to.
Channel it, right?
Yes, when you want to.
When you want to.
Want to. And so as an idea person, as a creator, as a maker, there is never a shortage of possibilities to go do. And it does take discernment. So I now have a really solid process that I use on myself, that I use with people to drill it down to the essence of what it is. What do I really want? And what am I willing to give up to get what I think I really want? Because sometimes whatever I have to give up means I really don't want it because I won't give that thing up.
If you could give our listeners two things to help them try to get to that point, what would you say they would be? Because I know a lot of people have a hard time finding focus.
Oh, focus and discipline?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I have a very firm belief, and you can argue with me if you want, but I would win, that people only do what they want to do.
Absolutely.
So if somebody says, like for me, well, I'll just use myself. I used to think that I wanted to be a size 10. I don't remember being a size 10 ever in my life, and I thought it was a commitment. I thought that being a smaller woman was something I was committed to, but I wasn't going to the gym. I wasn't eating right. I wasn't doing the work. And so I can walk around the world carrying the idea that I want something, but I don't actually want to do the thing to get to it, so I don't clearly want it. Because if I wanted to do it, I do watch Netflix at night when I want to because I can, and I could be writing. Right? I could be writing in my next book that's my first draft is done. And I, right now, I'm choosing to watch Netflix instead of write. So I'm doing what I want to do. And I think if people are honest, so is everyone else. We're doing exactly what we want to do. So the key would be, one of the keys would be find what you want to do.
And be honest about it.
And be straight with yourself. Yeah. Because carrying around the thought that you're failing at something is not healthy.
Yeah.
When in fact, you just don't want to do it. And that's okay. Everybody, somebody else will do what you don't want to do.
Sure.
In fact, they're already doing it.
Yeah.
So one thing is to make sure that it's something that you actually want to do. And the other thing is I'm a big fan of segmenting time. So I don't make to-do lists ever, but I do put stuff on my calendar. So if I'm breaking a project down to get it done, and I'm a get shit done girl, I like to get shit done. But I only get it done if I put the baby steps of it on my calendar. Mm. And then I have to want to do those baby steps, or I have to be willing to outsource it. Sometimes not outsourcing can block me too, because I don't want to do it, but I don't also want to pay someone to do it.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It doesn't get done for a long time. So those two things, I think the focus in terms of the calendar, and then understanding what you actually do want to do. And if you want to know what you're committed to, look at your life. So look at your calendar, look at the people you're spending time with, look at what is getting done, and then look for the commitment that's embedded in that, because it's in there.
Mm-hmm. Those are great. Those are great tips.
What if you you talk about that commitment? What if, and I guess this kind of goes hand in hand with what you just said, but how do you become committed to something that you probably should be committed to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how do you, like, you have these ideas in your head. You know you do want to do those things. How do you take those? Or is it just boiled down to baby steps? Or how do you shift that commitment or shift that focus? Like, I'll give you an example, right? I mean, listeners know about me. I'm busy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be busy all the time, but I sure, damn sure am busy all the time.
Is that true, though?
Exactly, right? So what I've started to do is I actually have been writing down, here are all the things I do that keep me from doing other things, right? Mm-hmm. Because by saying yes to all these things, that means I'm saying no to other things. And maybe the things I'm saying no to, I need to start saying yes to and shifting my focus to that. So my process right now is to write all the things down that I do and to say, all right, maybe I don't need to do that, or I don't need to do that, or I don't need to do that.
So you're talking about something I ask people to do quite often, and it's a stop doing list instead of a to-do list. It's a stop doing list, and that's powerful. And also, I have a download that comes with my newsletter subscription that's called A List of Six. I have to admit that I do not use it. I have used it, but right now I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's six things that are that you get permission to do the next day. You do this at night. You make a list of six things that you're actually going to complete tomorrow. So it's not six projects. It's six tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that every night. And then your subconscious works on the stuff when you're sleeping. So, and also if you lay awake at night thinking about what you have to do tomorrow, it kind of helps that, because it helps you say, okay, I've got a plan. But the notion behind the list of six is I'm only going to do things that drive something important in my life forward. Mm-hmm. That's my filter. So if I said yes to going out for wine with somebody at work that I don't really like, that isn't really driving anything. I was people pleasing because I didn't want to hurt her feelings or his feelings. But in reality, I would rather be doing marketing for my podcast or playing with my kids or doing something else. So I think it's really important to understand what you actually want and what you're creating through your actions, and then look at your list again and say, that list that you made of all the things that you could do, people you say yes to, each of those things, ask the question, does this drive something important forward in my life? If not, it's definitely on the stop doing list. Because, yeah, one rodeo we have here. So if you're not busy building a wildly happy life, sorry for you, because you could.
Yeah. And I suffer from a yes problem, you know, and not because I don't want to do all those things, because genuinely, everything that's on the list, I enjoy. If I don't like doing something, I don't do it. So everything on that list, I like it. It's fun. It fulfills me. But that list can become all consuming and can drive my life versus me driving my life.
Yep.
You know, so that's kind of the direction that I'm starting to take, to say, okay, let's simplify things a little bit here.
Simplify.
Let's not, I'm a big believer in jumping. I'm a jumper. That's what I do. And I say yes to things because I like them, but also because I think I can do a good job at them, and they make me excited. I only say yes to things that are exciting, but I say yes to a lot of things that are exciting. You know, and so it's just, it's kind of narrowing that down and saying, okay, with my one at bat, with my, this is not my practice life, what are the things that are the most important on that list? Because you can focus on 50 different things, mm-hmm. but probably some balls are dropping.
And I'm going to take the opposite mm-hmm. side of that too, because I know that a lot of times in my life, I've made excuses so I don't have to say yes, mm-hmm. because being happy can be scary too. Mm. Like I was afraid to be happy. I was afraid to do the things that I really enjoyed because I was so invested in making the people around me happy, whether it was parental or friends or relationships or those things, that I would say no because, oh, well, I need to make sure XYZ mm-hmm. got done for whomever. And once I started saying yes to the things that I really enjoyed, I started to become happier. So there's an opposite side to that too, of making excuses about not saying yes mm-hmm. to things mm-hmm. that make you happy.
And no is a complete sentence.
Mm.
It can be.
Yeah.
And also people pleasing is something too that you sounds like you're recovering from. You're in the midst of.
I'm getting there.
I'm also a recovering people pleaser. I still struggle with it. But that's another thing great about being 57, because it's okay if you say no now. People don't care as much as you think they will.
Sure, sure.
You don't have to justify saying no, especially if you're sacrificing something you really need to say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
You do get into, and this is probably a whole other podcast, but you do get into shifting of relationships when that starts to happen.
You have to be willing to accept the repercussions of a conversation like that. I teach how to have difficult conversations because we all need to have them, and the alternative is not to have them, mm-hmm. which leads to kind of a people-pleasing situation.
Yeah.
So if somebody understands why you don't want to do that thing, if you say, look, I have a choice with this hour of my time tonight. I can either come out and do this thing for you or with you, or I can do something that moves my dream forward.
Mm-hmm.
So this is nothing against you, but this is my choice. This is the reality of my mm-hmm. life right now. And I'm going to choose this, and there's no hard feelings. I still love you.
Yeah.
And what they choose to do with it,
If they're going to run off on a tangent saying that you don't love them or you don't care about them or it's all about you, then okay, that's their work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you've done yours because you're speaking the truth about what you're creating, what you're making in your life. And that does make you happier. And sometimes people go. Another thing mm-hmm. that happened in my mid-30s is I had to let some people go. I had to do some spring cleaning in my world with people who were dragging me down. I had a couple of people in my life who always led with what their problems were. Because I guess I've always been sort of a 5-cent Lucy girl, even before I was a coach. People always came to me with their
you
stuff.
You do give off that feeling of that you want to hear. Yeah. That you...
It'll be 5 cents, please.
Yes.
So
I think you need to up your prices.
But those people didn't ever mm-hmm. ask me what was going on in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I found myself answering the phone at midnight with a drunk friend who called me often. And it was just blah, 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 blah. And I'm sleeping because I'm working tomorrow, right? And then I just decided I'm not getting anything back for that relationship. So I stopped answering the phone. And that was a chicken shit way to end the relationship. But it did work.
Yeah.
And so now I would do it differently because I'm a little mm-hmm. wiser. But
sure.
I think we get to choose who we are, who we spend time with. I know we get to choose. And because time is so precious and it gets more precious the older you get, you really, my best coaching to anyone right now is just be so, so discerning with your time. Hmm. It's not promised. I could get in the car and I could crash. I don't know. Yeah. I don't like the term getting hit by a bus, but it could happen.
Yeah.
And so I think the bottom line is if we're going to be wildly happy, and as women, we're kind of trained to be people pleasers, I think, and do everything for everyone people. It's even a bigger problem for us. You know, like my husband's stuff just rolls right off him. He never gets balled up about anything. He is so easygoing, and I'm the one like worry, taking care. I'm the mother hen. I'm taking mm-hmm. care of the nest, and I want people to be loved and supported, and I worry about stuff. And so the more we can discern about how we're going to use our life force, the happier we can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really a great way to wrap up the whole conversation. I think you, you know, wrapped it up nicely in the holiday spirit, put a nice little bow on it. But I want the listeners to know where they can find you and where they can find more information. So,
and your book.
Yep. So if you go to Amazon, we are not in the extended distribution, so you have to get it from Amazon. And the book is called Rise. And if you Google Rise with my first name spelled C-H-A-R-R-I-S-E, it will come up. You can buy the book that way. You can go to bewildlyhappy.com, and the book link is there as well. And also my art store is there, and my coaching information is there. Everything is in one spot right now.
We will share that on our Facebook page as well. And so folks can find it that way too. And any final thoughts from you as, you know, our listening audiences, they've been very responsive to the whole idea of looking inside yourself and figuring out what your priorities are and really living your best life, I guess, if we're using a buzzword from 2018. Yeah. So any final thoughts?
Yeah, the only thing that I guess I would, to wrap, I would say focus on loving yourself more and judging yourself less. And we all carry around this list of shoulds. You said it a few times tonight. We call that shoulding on yourself in the business I'm in. Stop shoulding on yourself.
That's amazing.
So think about, just really think about like how you can be a little more gentle with yourself, because at any given moment, all of us are just doing the best we can do with our current level of thinking, our current intellect, our current life circumstances. Mm-hmm. We're doing the best we can. Give yourself some slack. Love yourself more. Judge yourself less.
I love it.
Me too. Space and grace, right?
Space and grace, 100%. Mm-hmm. I, you know, we're sitting here talking about doing what you love. Came across this quote from Henry David Thoreau. Do what you love. Know your own bone. Gnaw it, bury it, unearth it, and gnaw it still. And I love that sentiment. I absolutely love it. And I think that it encompasses all of the things that you're talking about right
now.
That
is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I can't beat that. I'm just going to drink.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, thank you so much for being on our episode, Therese. This has been a fantastic conversation. It's been great to reconnect. And I can't wait to see what you will bring to us next.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to read this book.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to sign it for you.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. And I'm excited to dive into that. And thank you again for coming and sharing your wisdom with our listeners. I have a feeling that we're going to get a lot of feedback on this episode. And I think people are going to glean a lot out of it. So
awesome.
you provide a lot of wisdom in a short amount of time. And you are worth the 5 cents.
Ah, awesome. I'm going to get rich. I'm retiring now.
There we go. Well, thanks, listeners, for joining us again. If you would so, please go out to iTunes, leave us a review. 5 stars would be preferred. Give us some comments. Shoot us an email at letschat@hahpod.com. Share us with your moms, your dads, your sisters, your brothers, your best friends, everybody else in that tribe that you have. And again, thanks for welcoming us into your life every week. And
keep hustling.
See ya.
Hustlin' in Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Angie Crocker. All views and opinions expressed on the show are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Angie on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. You can also send the show an email to letschat@hihpod.com. Feel free to write into the show if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. So be sure to reach out to us if you've got a question, comment, want to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all the ladies have today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for their newest episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.